Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Tom Osmond for another Saturday afternoon of memories and fun. Tom, you with us?
Absolutely, as always.
Excited?
About this show? Yeah, always.
Final warm days of summer.
Why'd you have to bring that into this? So happy.
We're going to record this clip because January we're going to be longing for this because at least you don't have to wear 3 layers and scarves and mittens and boots and...
No, you just need to have 5 fans pointed at you while you're trying to sleep. That's all.
Well, that too. And, hey, it's Minnesota State Fair Week. Have you been?
I went over there to find my girlfriend's glasses because she dropped them there, and that's about it. I'm trying to get over there before they close up shop, though.
A few more days. The attendance has not been good because of the heat. You know, I personally, now, this is going to be very sacrilegious to Minnesota. I'm not going to the fair this year.
You are a sacrilegious man.
I am sacrilegious. I decided that I don't need to eat the food there, and I hear it's great. I hear a lot of deep-fried Tootsie Rolls or deep-fried powdered donuts or whatever there's there this year. But I was pulling up some video this week, and I decided that the fair, it's not too different. They find 1 or 2 new food features. But let's listen to the fair opening from 1985.
The WCCO television studios at the Minnesota State Fair. This is the 5 p.m. report.
Popcorn, cotton candy, caramel apples, those little teeny donuts. They're all here along with all the carnival rides that go hand in hand with the Minnesota State Fair. An admittedly soggy opening day, as you can see, but crowds have managed to make it to the midway nonetheless. Good afternoon, everyone. Debbie Ely and I sitting in for Pat Miles and Don Shelby, who have been assigned otherwise for this opening day of the State Fair.
And again this year, we are broadcasting live from the WCCO television booth here at the fairgrounds each day at noon, 5, 6, and we'll be back at the station at 10. The fair is now more than 11 hours old, and this is Senior Citizens Day. Today, many of them came in busloads to take in all of the attractions. New this year is the Whitewater Raft Ride. But there are also those old standbys, such as the slide in Ye Olde Mill. And just as entertaining as the rides are some of the radio personalities who are doing their shows from the fair this year. Boone and Erickson, for example.
August, how are you?
Good. Yes, fine. Yes, fine.
So you were checking out the Ludafisk?
Oh, yeah, they got Ludafisk con carne.
Well, we couldn't find the Ludafisk con carne stand, but we did see just about everything else this year. This year's fair is expected to attract about 1.4 million people, and it lasts through Labor Day.
So this week was Senior Day, and not a good combination, Senior Day and then the excessive heat.
Well, they must have been the ones that all went to the cat exhibit, the internet cat exhibit that had more people in it than any other show at the State Fair this year.
Well, then, I guess some things do change. But look
it's
at the,
updating, Tom.
Look at these booths on, you can go to tcmedianow.com and check out these videos of State Fairs past. The booths are all there. The food, same batter, different inside, but it's all there. Dave Moore not with us, but a man who did a few state fairs at KSTP AM Radio and
WCCO.
And WCCO and K-Talk, Ron Rosenbaum. Welcome to Flashback Twin Cities.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Do you miss doing the fair for 3 hours?
No. I did the fair with Barrero Tuesday. And it was, I think it was 96, 97 degrees. You know, you were playing that clip. I worked in that
booth.
Broadcasting deal and did General Hospital with Charlie Boone and Erickson and Arnie Carlson's wife.
Now, there's a combination.
And Dark Star, by the way.
How did this combo come up? That's amazing.
Well, I was working for CCO at the time, and so was Dark Star, and Boone and Erickson. Charlie Boone worked he worked on the weekend, and I worked on the weekend then. We worked on Saturday, and they did, you know, brought back Boone and Erickson. I mean, they were the two nicest guys in the whole world. And I, you know, Dark Star was a forever client of mine,
He was a good guy. He was.
I love Dark Star. I mean, he was. You know, I lived in Boston a lot of years. Boston was a town of characters. Twin Cities, really, not quite so much. but he was the real deal as far as a character.
He was not a character. He was the character. He was the man.
He was the character, yeah.
And we were talking a little before the show started. There's a few people in this town that got radio careers out of being characters. Tommy Mischke, Dark Star. These are guys that they were callers to radio stations.
Mischke was a caller on Don Vogel, and eventually they hired him.
He was a fake caller. He was a caller
caller. By the way, Tommy's another good friend who I worked with for many, many years at KSTP and a monster talent. There are a small number of people. Obviously Tom Bernard is one of them, Boone and Erickson, Steve Cannon. But Mischke is in that category as well. Monster talent.
Well, and real radio genius. I mean, not. I think it's very. And I don't mean to disparage anyone who's been on the show or will be. I think it's simple to take the headlines off the paper and just read the headlines and then comment on them. But you take your Mischke's, your Cannon, Bernard. They did something different with it. Something that had not been done before, and that's why. There's popular.
They are to radio, in my opinion, what Dave Moore was to television. They were head and shoulders above anybody else who was doing what they do. And, you know, I mean, I've worked in radio a lot of years. You know, I can do a declarative sentence, you know, mm-hmm. put a subject and verb. But these guys were monster talents.
Well, and let's talk today because usually you're interviewing guests or taking calls, and today you're the interviewee today. And
it's kind of weird, by the way.
Ron Rosenbaum, our guest today, you're not just a radio personality, and you are also an attorney. You've worked at CCO, KTOC, KFAN, KSTP for many years. And also you are a headmaster at the Boston school system. So.
During the worst days of the Boston desegregation war, because that's what it was. The worst school was South Boston High School. Federal judge removed the administration. There had been a stabbing. It was the most violent school in the country. And at the time, I was helping run a program in the basement of Central High School in St. Paul for criminally adjudicated kids. Two of us and two other people got recruited to take over that school during those years. I mean, it was... So we got to deal with Whitey and Billy Bulger, you know, the mobster, and his brother was the head of the Senate, and the mob, and you name it, the Klan, the Nazis. They were all there in South Boston. You know, I was 26 years old.
This post-law degree or pre-law degree?
No, way pre-law degree.
Okay.
No, I was working in inner-city schools at the time. And I've had a number of unsuccessful careers, by the way. They go on forever.
It makes for a great story, though. It makes for great radio conversations.
It was, for people, I remember we finally let a reporter in. You know, I mean, it was really, we had giant metal detectors. I mean, we were the most violent school in the whole country. And I'll never forget this reporter began to shake, and literally he first reporter allowed in the building, he ran out of the building. You know, and it was a kind mm-hmm. of a frightening place. We had kind of gotten used to the violence, but it was
well. Were you shaking thing. Because even Central High School in St. Paul, we're talking a different caliber of action than out in Boston.
Yeah, I got used to it, and I was in charge of discipline, so it really did not look good for me to shake. Okay, a lot of people who looked to me as you know, all 160 pounds
well, say,
of me.
If you don't know Ron, he is 7 feet tall, and he comes in here and has a very intimidating.
Well, the giant was your brother.
My brother is big. They thought we were afraid of nothing because mm-hmm. the one thing I had learned from working in the inner city is. Never let them see a sweat. By the way, mm-hmm. not a bad rule for radio, too, as I had my own radio show at a time I did not yet know how to turn on the microphone at WCCO.
Oh, right, right.
And that's the truth, too.
And the line you told me that
Charlie Boone
told you was, your show sounds way better with the mic on.
That's right. And you know, Charlie was not the kind to be bitingly sarcastic, but he certainly had a point. This was actually kind of the first... it was the origination of the holding court show. And, you know, knowing nothing about radio, sometimes I have five or six lawyers. It got properly named the Yelling Lawyer Show. Nobody ever listened to anybody else. It was just people yelling and screaming. But actually, it was a fairly successful show. But we'd done about 3 minutes, and Charlie walked in and very gently but to the point said, the show is really much better when you turn the microphone. I didn't yet know you had to do that.
Our producer, Tom, he's a Brown College graduate. I think that was maybe the first.
I love Brown. I love the people who went to Brown because they all knew more than I knew. Right? They knew how to run the board. I mean, I still don't know how to turn on. Do you know how to run the board, Tom?
No, I don't.
That's why I'm here.
I'd press and guess for a while, and then we'd probably have Sounds of Sinatra on by the time I was done with it.
No, I don't know how to do it. I always thought what they were doing was magic on the board.
Well, we got folks like Mike Kronforst over there and Terry Miller that will just tear you apart if you don't figure it out quick.
Well, I think the Brown graduates really come out knowing a lot of things.
Well, you know, in the
I never had any training at all
until about 25 years ago. I think they used to have to get an FCC license to even be on the air to host your show, and you had to
really
In the past, not any time recently.
You need a broadcasting license.
You need an FCC license. So even some of your people that are on the air right now on your Terry Trains who might portray a different persona on air. When they went to Brown Institute in the day, they had to actually pass competencies to be able to be on the air.
Oh, wouldn't that be something?
Well, I'll tell you, it's not such a bad idea because today, in my opinion, a lot of people that are on the air can't hold a candle to some of the monster talents that have worked in radio.
I would absolutely agree with you on that.
It's too bad.
And let's talk about that because when you entered radio in about 1995,
my first actual radio job. Now, I'd been on the radio going back to probably 89 or 90 when I started representing Yates.
Mm-hmm. Bob Yates, if anyone remembers.
Yeah, Bob Yates. It was my first radio
Bob's
client.
Radio Basics, if you remember those days.
Well, he was another monster talent. It was during the OJ case where, you know, if you knew the difference between a prosecutor and a defendant, you could be a legal analyst on the air. I mean, you know, it's how all the Greta Van Susterens, who were terrible lawyers,
court
went
TV
on.
Profited way too much from that.
Well,
year.
As did CNN. I mean, they were doing OJ, you know, 24/7, and then I just because I used to go to Vegas all the time. I happened to be out there and went to the famous Holyfield Tyson biting fight.
Oh, right, sure.
And so I did. You know, Yates acted like I was their correspondent who was sent out for it. And I mean, you know, it was a radio of the mind. But the point is, I didn't really know how to do anything. I mean, I just knew how to talk, and I'm not that good at that either. But it was sort of a time when you could do that. I mean, I approached the general manager of WCCO, which was a legendary station. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I was unworthy of that station. And said, I have an idea for a show. And he said, when do you want to start? I'm not sure that could happen today.
Well, and this is a day of local. You have to remember, before media deregulation of 1996, not to bore the audience with some of this legal or congressional tactics here, but stations were locally owned. A lot of them were locally owned. You couldn't own a big cluster of stations like you can now. I mean, some of the big networks own stations. But even in the 90s, CCO, KSDP, even 9 had local management and ownership. And when you called the station, you talked to the local
Correct.
People. Today, with so many stations on automated satellite, and even our own KLDB, we are locally owned. We're one of the few locally owned stations in town.
The only other one that I'm really aware of is KSDP, and that's the Hubbards.
And when you call Hubbard Broadcasting, you might get Hubbard if you call Elkin for the
Let me tell you something. I worked for the Hubbards for 10 years, and you could, even, you know, a lowly talk show host like me could go up if we felt like it and meet with Stanley Hubbard. There wasn't Stanley, we'll see you 2 weeks from next Thursday. I mean, he was there. Come in, you know, and I'm telling you, he and I didn't agree on whether it was Monday or Tuesday, but I really respected the hell out of the guy. He was a true broadcaster, and you know, Mark O'Connell and I did. I know you got to take a break. I recognize that symbol, by the way, from my radio.
It's a Brown College signal, I think, right?
How long did it take you to that breaking thing?
Oh,
I like
it's
that.
All of the wrist.
I used to ignore it, by the way, when my board op did it. If I was telling something important, I don't give a damn about breaks. We didn't even take them.
I'm waiting for you to finish up. I'm just telling him when he gets a moment, let's go for it.
Mark O'Connell and I did a show. Sometimes it was 3 hours, sometimes it was 4 hours, sometimes I did it alone, whatever. But, you know, it wasn't a right-wing show, and we were on a right-wing
station.
And Mr. Hubbard, I think it's a fair statement, is a very conservative guy. One of the reasons I respect him, he never, ever, ever said, you should do this, you should do that. He believed in freedom of broadcasting.
Well, and Joe Soucheray one time, I listened to the show one time, and he did say, someone asked him, has the Hubbard family ever questioned your content of your program? He said, never.
Yeah. No, they don't do that. I mean, you know, they might get Cancel rid it. Of you, but it's not going to be because of content.
No, I don't think a Hubbard broadcast show that I can think of has been canceled out of political content.
No, Nick Coleman thinks his was, but he's wrong. There were other reasons.
And where's he been since then? He's been on a couple other.
Exactly.
And he was even on a station where his politics were
And he got canned there. That's
Air America.
Janet Roberts or whatever.
Yeah, Air America. Janet Roberts was the GM. Yeah. Let's take a break and we'll talk a little bit more about Nick Coleman or Ron Rosenbaum, whatever comes up in mind. Flashback Twin Cities. We'll be back. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with my guest Ron Rosenbaum, entertainer.
Kind of a disco beat here.
This is, you know what this is from? This is from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
Yeah.
And the Channel 9 news team used this as their theme song during the ABC days when they were nothing. And I thought, well, this is good enough for Channel 9 news. It's good enough for Flashback Twin Cities.
I used to use
Lawyers, Guns, and
Lawyers,
Money.
Lawyers, Guns, and Money by Warren.
And Sinatra.
And Sinatra, yeah. In fact, they finally told me, stop playing Sinatra. Your audience is younger. They've never heard of Frank Sinatra.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but was that a consultant that told you this?
No.
Okay,
they never made me work with a consultant. Everybody else did. I met him, but I never worked with a consultant.
Well, we were talking about you entered in radio, and then you were doing a weekly show on CCO AM, and if my memory serves me correctly, you then went to KSDP AM to work on the Barbara Carlson show.
Yeah, you're good memory. I had actually sued. It's kind of a funny story. I was a young, aggressive pup lawyer and represented Bob Yates, who had hired me because I'd taken on Dayton's. It was an African-American so-called shoplifter, even though he hadn't been shoplifting. Mm-hmm. He had a bad experience there. We took on Dayton's and won. Yates was fired. I think he was doing morning and afternoon drive at KSTP and was fired by the general manager, somebody named Virginia Morris. He hired me because they wanted to enforce a non-compete, and KFAN wanted to hire him. So I sued KFAN and I sued KSTP and got into a deal on the air, or not on the air, but in the newspapers with this Virginia Morris. I didn't know it was Ginny Hubbard.
Right.
I might not have been so cavalier had I known. In any event, we won, and Yates got hired, and then I got hired not that long after that, doing this show on called Holding Court on WCCO, and then I got a call to have lunch with Virginia Morris. It was Ginny Morris. I didn't even put the two of them together, and I'll never forget, she looked at me and says, you know, I shouldn't even be speaking to you, and of course, in my inimitable fashion, I said, I don't remember asking you to lunch either, and well, anyway, I went to work for her. And she's really one of the great
ladies.
At what
point did you realize it was Hubbard? Was it after lunch or was it the first day you were on the job?
No, it was pretty clear early. Okay. I had actually a guy named Paul Hanna, who's a First Amendment lawyer, wonderful guy, is the guy who arranged the lunch. And he's the one who told me, I don't know if you know, this is Stanley Hubbard's daughter, which I did not know. But they're very down-to-earth people. I love the Hubbards, and I love Ginny, who hired me, and I worked there for 10 years. It was a great experience.
Well, you did Babs and the Boys, and then they about 9/11.
That's right.
They took Dr. Laura off and decided maybe some local programming might be a good thing.
Well, you do have a good memory. They took Dr. Laura off, and
that was during the whole controversy. She had made some comments about a segment of population, and her show tanked, and it was probably a perfect storm of things that happened.
And we started doing something. I continued doing the Babs and the Boys show, but we started our own show called, we just call it the 9/11 show, and it was really probably the most fun radio I ever had. It was Mark O'Connell and a fat New York police detective named Dan Connery,
mm-hmm.
who was a monster talent. And he didn't even know it. I mean, he was a guy you'd meet in the bar and you just sit there and talk. It was the three of us. And we really took on some very serious issues. But and it was a very frightened time in America. And it was really a nice show. We did that for 3 months. All of us continued working at KSTP after that. But that show ended. They replaced it with the Ian Punnett Show.
Well, and then moved on to your own show after, I think, did John Woodley have a show on for a while, too? When
Woodley, trying to remember, I think he was part of O'Connell's show.
Okay, okay.
John's a nice guy. I think radio was probably not his future.
Well, and Jesse Ventura's communications director was John Woodley. So if you have to give the guy credit, he did represent Ventura on the communications side.
He's the nicest guy in the world, by the way.
He should have got a job.
I enjoyed working with John, but you kind of need to be an egomaniac, as I'm sure you know, because you have your own show. People that work behind the microphone, and I'm one of them, who think that people actually want to hear what they have to say, you have to be kind of an obnoxious egomaniac. Well,
it's unfortunately limited to us to 1 hour. I mean, we should be on for 8 hours. That's the only challenge we have here.
That's how we felt.
You're learning.
Yeah, you do have to be. I represent a lot of radio people. All radio people, myself included, are strange
Well,
people.
We're Minnesotans. We're supposed to not be egomaniacs. We're supposed to be humble. We're supposed to be that, you know, Norwegian, Scandinavian, just calm, demeanor, no emotion. Well, that's not quite
the
case.
Well, my last name
radio.
Is Rosenbaum, so, of course, I'm Norwegian top to bottom, as I'm
well,
sure you
sure,
can figure out.
So you're Italian, right? Italian guy here?
Yeah, right,
okay,
Italian,
all right, sure.
Exactly.
But you had your own show with Mark O'Connell, Ron Rosenbaum, our guest today, and you were on, we were talking about this before, that was the, probably last decade, the most right our country was in. It was after 9/11. We were in two wars. It was all flags, all patriotism all the time.
Yep.
And you were, I don't even think your show was left-leaning. I don't think it was even leaning. It was a show that was pretty much take it by fact and let's diagnose it. And the callers that were on before you, I think Bob Davis was doing mornings there, and then you had Suchere and Lewis. It was tough.
Rush Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh. I forgot about that one.
Kennedy.
Well, I forgot about that. Those two, too. I'm talking about the local hosts, but that had been fun radio because I know that you don't. If you're preaching to the choir, what fun is that? To get those callers, and the same regular callers that always had a lot of emotion and anger, they had to call up and tell you what they thought, how wrong you were.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed that. You know, some people said we were singing rock and roll on a country station. I mean, mm-hmm. We were preceded by right-wingers. We were followed by right-wingers. But we had a hell of an audience, and I really, as did O'Connell, we really enjoyed pairing. And you know, in all honesty, probably 20% of the calls were negative. They really mm-hmm. were not much mm-hmm. higher. And it sort of it is because we were really not ideologues. We kind of took it as it
right.
went. And now, to some people, not being an ideologue
is left.
It's being a member of the Communist Party. But I didn't care. After facing guns and rocks and knives at South Boston, this was really like, you know, it was air conditioned. It was heated in the winter. You know, it was
well,
fine.
And right wing in Minnesota, that's flaming left in Georgia. I mean, because we were talking before the show
true,
started.
By the way,
you take Jason Lewis, who I think is a great radio talent. You take Joe Suchere, their politics and their demeanor. It's right to Minnesota, but you get on south, you get out west.
Yeah, they're flaming liberals to
right.
those people. We actually had a pretty good lineup on that station at that time. O'Connell and I, and we caught a lot of hate mail. We took over for Rush Limbaugh. You know,
for an hour.
Rush Limbaugh was.
He's time shifted. Yeah.
Yeah. People didn't like that. I didn't really care. But, you know, Suchere at that time was kind of at the top of his game. Jason Lewis was at the top of his game.
And Mischke
was at the station. Yeah. I mean, it was rather an eclectic group.
Well, how often do you have a station with Rush Limbaugh and then Tommy Mischke in the same bandwidth within
and
a few
Ron
hours?
Rosenbaum.
And Ron Rosenbaum. I mean, that's there's, and you have to give credit to the Hubbards for doing that, and it worked for them for a long time.
It did. This was really a very popular station during those years. It was a lot of fun.
I was at an event you did with Sean Hannity not long before the station format kind of blew up, and I remember you guys. I think that Sean Hannity was expecting a whole group of people to be there that were going to be nodding their head yes, and I think that there was some. I think the discussion that happened beforehand was probably not the discussion he's used to when he goes to these local stations right. and come out.
He is used to preaching to the choir.
Absolutely,
that is Sean Hannity's deal. He's a guy who, in my opinion, is a lesser talent. I mean, Rush Limbaugh, and believe me, I do not agree with the guy's a monster talent. Give the devil his due. Nobody thought you could have a show on the AM dial at 11 o'clock in the morning that would move the dial.
There's not a communication professor in the country that won't say that Rush Limbaugh did save AM radio at that time.
No question.
I mean, KSB AM radio, I think that a lot of people would agree, that was on the auction block for a long time for the Hubbard family. I mean,
he resurrected that station. There's no question about it. And Stanley Hubbard was really one of the first stations to sign on with Rush Limbaugh. And Limbaugh's deal later became, I'm sure you know, syndication usually, you know, you divide the minutes. Stations that want Rush Limbaugh, they got to pay.
Right.
That's kind of unusual.
Well, Cumulus is deciding they don't want to pay anymore. That's the latest news of the day.
Yes, exactly. And I deal with the Dickey family who own Cumulus because I represent Bernard, and so I've negotiated with the Dickies.
I might have heard that once or twice if you listen to that other station on the dial. I've heard some reference to – this is very inside radio talk to the audience, but I think it's – fascinating. What do you think is next? I mean, you've represented media talent. What are we going to have high paid media talent the next turn here? The internet's here. All content is free now. People aren't paying for newspapers. They're not paying for radio. I mean, podcast radio. There's very little advertising in it right now. What do you think is next for?
I kind of think that's the future. I think that it would be a bad time to be a young fella. It used to be that, you know, you started in the sticks, you went to North Dakota, maybe you went to Wyoming, and you sort of earned your spurs, and then you went to the big city. I think today, internet radio, I think podcasting is very much the wave of the future. I mean, Tom Bernard's podcast, which is literally a year old, is doing tons of advertising. It's going to be on the radio. It's going to be on a radio station as well as a podcast. Your listeners, does everybody even know what a podcast is?
I think I didn't.
Not that long ago, I didn't know what it was.
I think we do here. Our audience may not know. And to clarify for the audience, I think that a lot of people have iPods, iPhones. This is a way to listen to radio. When you want to, without commercials.
Where you want.
I mean, there's commercials. There's ads. I mean, even Tom Bernard's podcast has commercials, but you don't listen to 4 minutes of audio.
It's not like a regular radio station. It's a little bit what's happening in the world of television, where the networks are in a panic because it's getting to the point now. By the way, as are the cable providers, where people can pick and choose and create their own networks.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, with Netflix, with Apple TV, with Hulu, I mean, it's all different. And I think it's only a matter of time, Tom, and I don't think it's very long, where you're going to be able to get internet radio on your radio in the car. And so, you know, instead of listening to a radio station, you'll listen to a podcast that you'll just tune right in that never was on a radio station. It was just done on the internet.
And I think, and you can either agree or disagree with me, I think that traditional media has, and by the way, we podcast this show, so if you have missed part of the show, Flashback Twin Cities, you can always podcast it on iTunes or the KLBB website. I think that traditional media has been slow to react, and including newspapers, TV, radio. I think they pretended the internet was not around. I think they had websites, but I think that only in the last couple of years you really see the integration. Even companies that own TV, radio, and, you know, online services are finally now integrating this. And
well, I think the newspapers in particular have still not really learned how to monetize the internet.
No.
I mean, some of them set up paywalls. It's all stuff that I think you're right. They've been very late. But young people understand this stuff. The idea for them, many of them don't even have televisions anymore. It's everything is done on the computer or on their smartphone.
Well, and that's just it. I think that traditional, you know, wire, no one wants to be held to a wire. Whether it be a outlet to plug into your wall or a cable. We don't want to be, you know, we people that are younger, excuse me, to the
well, I have a cable, but it runs straight from my computer to my television because, yeah, exactly, I don't want to pay all these bills for channels that I'm never going to use.
Yeah, and that is, you know, for years, the cable company said, here's the package, mm-hmm. take it or leave it. Now, is it Aereo, whatever it is, there's one where you can literally create your own network. You might want CNN. You might not want ESPN. That's a pretty big threat to the cable company.
I think there's a bit of denial because I did an event at the History Center a couple years ago, and I called the Channel 4, one of the people in PR, and asked if they could provide some information on ratings, talk a little bit about the history of ratings. I wanted to emphasize in the 70s, these stations were getting 51% shares.
Oh, yeah.
And she told me, we don't acknowledge the fact that our share, our audience share, has dwindled over the years, and I think they were embarrassed to even
say
that.
Well, they ought to acknowledge it.
Well, and that was...
There was a time when, I think, Boone and Erickson in the morning, and, I mean, it might have been true the whole day, they were getting 40, 50, 60%. I mean, that could never happen again.
Well, CCO Radio was, I mean, even in town here, the number one, number two stations, they were about four times even their closest competitor for a long time. I think today might be a little bit different now. A lot of it's syndicated.
They were locally owned in
those
days, too.
Mm-hmm.
As was WCCO Television. The only one that's locally owned is KSDP.
And again, to their credit, they're doing podcasting. They got Tom Bernard back doing voiceover. They're doing
that's
quite
right.
Well.
He's the sound of the television.
He was for a long time too. And if you go to tcmedianow.com, you can hear some of Tommy B's.
You should have him on this show. He can tell you a little bit about radio.
If you can,
by the way, the largest share of any morning show in the United States. That doesn't mean he has more listeners than he have in New York, but a larger share.
You can arrange Tom Bernard on this show. That, I mean, I'll owe you a lot more than the hour you're charging me.
Don't
for this,
know if
for this
I can
hour.
Get him to drive to Stillwater.
No, we can. I think we can phone it in. We can go to him. We can go to him, right, Tom?
Yeah, sure.
What the hell am I doing out here?
That's
then?
Right. That's
schlepping all the way from the city.
So, do you miss regular radio? I mean, do you miss? You talk about being egos, and do you miss ever being at home and like this Anthony Weiner trial? Do you miss like going on Saturday and saying, I wish we could discuss this for 2 hours.
You know, I do enough
in that
on
trial,
Barrero.
The Anthony Weiner situation, not a trial. He's in a situation now.
I do enough on Barrero, and every time there's a breaking legal story, I'll be on. No, you know what? I did it for a lot of years. People don't really realize if you do talk radio right, you might be on for 3 hours, but you're working at least 4, 5, 6 hours, and you're always prepping. You're mm-hmm. never not prepping because everything, I mean, you got time to fill, and I'm not one of those people who just went in and winged it.
Well, it sounds easy. If you listen to radio, it sounds easy because pros make it sound easy.
The better they are, the easier it sounds.
And going in my
ear. Bernard still works his tail off.
Oh, I agree.
And nobody worked as hard as Mischke.
No.
He scripted the whole show. I wouldn't even know how to script a whole show.
And by the way, if you don't know who Tom Mischke is, he's a radio talent that he made some, I wouldn't call them prank calls, but he made some very strange calls for the Don Vogel Show, another legend who's not with us any longer. The Phantom Caller was his tag name. And I think Don, who saw the genius in this, said, come on in. And
they later had a falling out, too, by the way.
I've heard a little bit about that, and I understand,
true.
Don didn't like how Tommy kind of sold out to the, you know, to the radio world when he got his own full-time gig, when they kind of had their creative differences.
I have to tell you, I don't know what I just know they had a big falling out. I've never pursued it, but, you know, radio people are all weird, I'm telling you.
Well, I think,
not, of course, you two, but...
Well, not at all. I mean,
you haven't known us long enough.
I have a website that has TV video on it. How weird, I mean, how not weird is that? That's very mainstream. Come on here. We just listened to State Fair audio from 28 years ago. That's
mainstream. Impressed, though, that you do seem like kind of a historian of radio.
Well, it's...
I mean, you know, many of these things happened before your time.
As long as I know nothing that's happening today, I can just tell you what happened yesterday. No, it is. There is a lot going on right now, and I think that you're talking about Cumulus. Do you see any slowdown to the station consolidation? Are we going to be pretty much on a switch pretty soon with the whole market's going to be on one switch with...
Well, it's an interesting question because most of these companies are in deep financial trouble.
Right.
Almost all... I mean, Clear Channel, which is the biggest, I'm told. I don't know. It's, you know who owns it?
Well, Red McCombs?
No, he's gone. But Romney's? That's who.
Bain Capital.
Bain Capital owns and didn't want to close because they bought at the top of the market. The market crashed, and radio stations, I think, are worth a lot less than they used to be. And Clear Channel is the biggest owner of radio stations in the world. Second biggest is Cumulus. Yeah.
Well, and Citadel, which owned when ABC Disney got out of the radio business. And Citadel, Ron Rosenbaum, by the way, media talent extraordinaire, when Cumulus bought...
Not sure I agree with that.
Well, okay. You got to
prep it somehow.
Got to prep it up a little bit, sell it up. When Cumulus bought Citadel. I thought, well, if you thought Citadel was penny pinching, wait till Cumulus comes to town, because
that's my experience with the Dickies and that's who owns them. I mean, when I negotiated Barnard's contract, I negotiated with John Dickey, who's the CFO of the company. I thought he was. And believe me, I've negotiated. I was telling, I don't know if I was the owner of the station, the story about when you negotiated with New York attorneys, which the first thing they do is they tell you to go to hell. That's before they've gotten to know you. Then they make sure, in case you didn't hear, they tell you in more explicit language.
Well, I'm amazed you got through the line, because don't they just go to their voicemail and then they pick it up if they feel
like
it?
Well, it depends how vulnerable they are in the lawsuit.
No, sure enough. There you go.
We did pretty well against them. But the Dickies, I mean, I have no idea what their financial, but I think they are buying more stations.
Well, in Minneapolis, we are special words. We still have local talent here. There's a lot of mid-sized markets, and even
that have none.
It's
all
gone.
Syndication. Mm-hmm. The smaller towns. It used to be one of my favorite things in driving west was listen to small town radio. Small town radio now is syndication. You can listen to Rush Limbaugh on 27 Trillion. You can go nonstop from here to California listening to Rush Limbaugh and Sean.
And
Hannity.
You do mostly when you go to Vegas. That's mostly. What
I'd rather
to,
put
right?
You know, screws in my forehead than do that. But I think it's sad what's happened to smaller radio stations. Mm-hmm. They're pretty much all syndication from somewhere else.
So did you think this journey of going from the Boston school system to being an attorney to being a, you know, did you see this down the road when you're looking at the prism of your life and being in South Boston with the knives and the guns, and did you see all this happening?
No. I have
it's an, it's
never...
Amazing, it's an amazing story.
I've never been a planner, you know. I mean, I went from South Boston. I was a newspaper reporter for the Boston Globe, a job I loved. Then I made documentary films for Channel 38.
Well, hold on a second. Now we haven't even talked about that. Your documentary filmmaker too.
I told you I've had many unsuccessful careers. I actually won an Emmy and handed to me by Geraldo Rivera.
Well, how can you say it's unsuccessful if you had an Emmy handed you by Geraldo?
Yeah, really, exactly. One of the most obnoxious people I ever met. But no, I in fact I didn't even plan on coming back here. My goal was to work for CBS News as a legal analyst, and then Fred Graham, who I'd done an internship, who was their legal analyst, got fired. And all of a sudden, I came back and started a law firm with an old friend, which I'd never intended to do. No, nothing in my life really has ever been by plan.
So we don't know what the next plan is.
Well, you know, there isn't that much time left here, Tom. no, I don't know. I've really kind of, it's been kind of fun representing a lot of these radio and TV people, a world I really knew nothing about. But
when you grew up here, now were you fascinated by media as a child?
I was,
as a
teenager? I was,
and I am too. And that's,
I was.
That's why I knew that you'd be a good.
And I'm a little bit like you. I was also terribly interested in a lot of the people that came before me that I was really too young to know. Announcers like Red Barber and people like that. The old Brooklyn Dodgers. I was interested in old news people. Huge fan. Now, I do remember Edward R. Murrow, but not during his top days. I've listened to many of the recordings of his broadcasting from the
See It Now and...
Well, no, way when he was doing live broadcasting in London during the war too, during the bombing of London. Way before my time, but I was really interested in. I've always been fascinated with media.
Well, and the challenge I have, and you probably can relate, is I can't just watch something and just be happy watching. I have to understand the diagnosis of everything that's happening around it and why we're reporting this and why we're using this video.
Nobody ever could have imagined what's happened to the world. I mean, when I was growing up, newspapers were flying high. I mean, the St. Paul
Twice
Minneapolis paper. Yeah, exactly.
And they were huge, and thick.
No, you're right. We got St. Paul, Dispatch and Pioneer Press were two different papers. I grew up in St. Paul. We got the morning and the afternoon, which I delivered. We got the afternoon paper. There was the Star, and there was the Tribune. Tribune was the strip morning paper. Mm-hmm. Star was the afternoon paper. Boston Globe had two editions. Now, I don't think there's an afternoon paper, maybe even in the whole country.
Well, it was modern day, it was the internet of the time, because today you can check up every 5 minutes for the update.
Right.
You got twice a day. And then if you're lucky, you got a 5, 6, and 10 o'clock news update. and you might have found out what happened to that missing girl or that missing or that.
Now people look at their phones. I mean, they're 24 hours a day. They're getting news. It's changed the whole world.
Well, it's surprising to me, right? That's even like the national networks, the national news. I asked like my family; they don't even watch national news anymore. I mean, why do you?
Nobody
need to?
Watches why the national news,
and they're still on, and they pay Diane Sawyer a lot of money to read that teleprompter every
well,
night.
Here's how that works. They skew so old. If you look at the ads, I mean, they're Depends, things like this, you know, pharmaceutical stuff. And even though nobody's watching it, their numbers are still far greater that watch the evening news than watch, you know, Anderson Cooper or CNN.
Bill O'Reilly.
By the way, Bill O'Reilly has relatively a small number of people, but he is God on the cables. I mean, he's led. Nobody's even close to Bill O'Reilly. He probably makes $30 million a year.
Have you been a legal analyst on his show yet?
Look
on that.
I couldn't stand it. You know, his legal analyst went on to big stuff. What's that pretty blonde?
Oh, she's replacing Hannity, I think.
Yes,
she
that's
is.
That's the one.
Are we time for a break, Tom? Or are we? Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with Ron Rosenbaum on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with Ron Rosenbaum. I'll let you do your own introduction because I've used a couple of them and I've been given feedback that...
Just another schmo another, from St. Paul.
Oh, there
that's
you go.
I'd introduce myself.
Going to the Lux tonight?
It doesn't exist anymore.
What? I did not know this.
It's really sad.
I haven't been down there in a while.
Well, the Lux, for people who don't know, it's a great restaurant on Lexington. And Grant, I live about a minute and a half from there. In St. Paul, and you know, the greatest bar for people and smoke cigars in there and the whole deal. And then it was bought by a group of people who thought it'd be really fun to run a restaurant, had no idea how to do it, and they drove it straight into the ground. It's been closed for months, and it may never reopen. It's too bad. It's a great restaurant.
How long has it been closed?
At least a couple months.
Okay, so it's not years ago. I'm not that.
No, it's not. And you never know. It might reopen, but. It doesn't appear to like
that. You know, I'm always worried about like Mancini's and Cassetta's. These landmarks we're used to.
Well, Cassetta's isn't going to close.
Well, not
believe
anymore.
Me. If people haven't been there, Cassetta's is. They now have a high end restaurant.
That's right.
At the top. In fact, I stopped there for pizza.
How
the
is
other
it?
Night. Huh?
Is it good? I've not been to the new
it
Cassetta's
is.
Yet.
It okay. is. Yeah, the Cassetta's are really good people, and the Mancini's are great people.
Oh,
I mean, but you know, a lot of the great institutions in St. Paul don't exist anymore.
Well, and you know what? For everyone in St. Paul, it does not exist. Minneapolis is about five that doesn't exist.
No,
because Minneapolis,
true.
You tear it down the second it closes.
Well, and all those great downtown. I mean, there was a time in downtown Minneapolis, and I remember it when, you know, there was Harry's and there was Charlie's. And, you know, it was a time when people in business went to lunch. And lunch was really a drinking lunch as
oh,
well
yeah,
as an
I
eating
mean,
lunch.
You have to sign papers nowadays not to drink at
right.
lunch. Right.
I mean, it's sort of. You know, if you watch Mad Men, there's a lot of truth to that era. That's how people live.
Well, and that era didn't end until about the 80s. I mean, the people who talk about
right.
the 60s. No, that was like the 80s.
Right.
Still. That was,
right.
That was,
but it was a drinking culture. And, you know, the federal courts were pretty much closed the whole summer. Federal judges would go have long lunches with the lawyers. And that stuff just doesn't exist anymore.
I have to ask you, it's about three stories on radio because I want to get your thoughts or your memories on this. One was the former VP of this country was called your radio show and didn't go very well.
That's yeah. Well, I can't remember what it was. I was never big.
Was he a candidate for Senate when that took place?
I think he was. Yeah, he's talking about Walter Mondale.
He didn't want to get asked any questions.
No, and I believe me. I never minded taking on politicians. It made no difference to me. I've never been a huge fan of politicians. And I can't remember. I'd never actually met the man, but he came on. And I asked him some question, and he got mad, and he hung up.
I got to go.
I got to go. And then O'Connell, of course, we used that to end our show then for the next several years because we thought it was pretty funny. But, yeah, Walter, who is sort of iconic – although his daughter worked in the next studio when I worked
there. Well, there you
Eleanor,
go.
Eleanor, who's sadly is now no longer with us. But Yeah, so I'm never a big fan of Walter Mondale after he hung up on us on the
air. Well, you know, it was during that same campaign, and this is not a political show, but I remember someone asked him when he entered the campaign really late, and there's a tragedy that happened, and someone asked him, so what's the biggest difference between you and your other candidate, Norm Coleman? He says, what's for you to decide?
Yeah.
Well, I just asked you the question.
Yeah. Well, we often had confrontations. I had a confrontation with Al Franken, who didn't like being asked tough questions.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my attitude, you can have politician on, you know.
Well, he got back at you. He did his own radio show that didn't last very long.
Oh, that right. You know, yeah. he was Mr. Left-Wing Firebrand, and then he gets to Senate, and you don't hear another word from him. You know what? He likes the job too much.
Well, and the second one was you had a candidate for U.S. House, and I know her name. I'm not even going to bring it up because she's not a public figure, but you had a candidate on that was running against Betty McCollum, and the interview was not exactly a hardball interview, and she couldn't answer any question you gave her. So then she calls back, and you said, okay, answer any question, talk whatever you want. And then she went the same circle again.
Now, who was it? I don't even remember.
Oh,
you could say her name.
It was Patrice Battaglia, I think, okay. Was her name. And
yeah, she was not ready for prime time, as I remember.
And then you gave her a second shot at it. And
it was worse.
It was worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, one of the early politicians that I had on before she became famous was Michelle Bachmann, who at the time was in the state house.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, Michelle Bachmann, like a lot of people, we don't agree if it's Tuesday or time for lunch. But you could see that she had monster talent as a politician.
Well,
I don't agree with any. I don't even like Michelle Bachmann, but she was a hell of a politician.
She wasn't afraid of the media. That's one thing.
She wasn't intimidated by me.
No.
I can tell you.
Well, you got to give her that. She does not. She doesn't fear MSNBC or the station. She goes right on there. Now, the aftermath is never great for her sometimes, but she doesn't fear it. This is her hometown. Still,
she was smart. People thought she was dumb, but she wasn't dumb. Michelle Bachmann is not dumb.
I mean, you've met a lot of politicians and media people. Do you think a lot of this is an act? And when they come back home, and then they're kind of laughing at what?
Absolutely, they're actors. One of the reasons I believe in being tough on politicians is I don't let them go on the air and play that game. And in fact, on Twitter all the time, you know, I'm ripping. You know, I make enemies every day of my life.
Well, then you're doing something right then, right?
I don't know. I don't care. I would rather be honest than play this game of sucking up to these people. It's never done much for me.
Well, the third story I want to ask you about is, and this is actually online if anyone wants to listen to it, is Mischke got a call later in the day from some caller who's mad that you hung up on him too quick or repeatedly hung up on him. So what do? You call Ron Rosenbaum at home and then get him on the air at 10 o'clock at night.
Well, I believed in doing talk radio that the callers were callers, but it doesn't mean it was their show. And what I learned from Larry King is that sometimes when there's a pause, you press the dump button, and people don't like it. They think, you know, it's like a regular phone conversation. I'm going to talk, and you're going to talk, and we're going to talk as long as we want. Well, as Bob Yates, apparently line was stolen from
Steve Cannon.
Steve Cannon, if they're that talented, they should have their own radio
show.
Well,
and that's the opposite of Mischke, who, again, radio genius. A pause, that was part of the show.
Oh,
you had a caller on for half
Tommy
hour.
Tommy had a whole different way than the callers and kind of making fun of them.
Mm-hmm.
I never made fun of callers.
No.
But I also didn't give them the whole time.
Well, you know what? There's always the next talent is coming from these calls, so don't release them too quickly. Tom, next week, when we get calls, don't release them too quickly.
Well, you got to be respectful of callers. I do believe
it's your audience.
Yeah, you do.
Ron, thank you for coming today. This is great talking about shootings and Boston and Anthony
Weiner.
I might
have ruined your radio show, but...
Well, if we're going to go out, let's go on a bang, right, shall we?
Exactly.
This is Flashback Twin Cities, KLBB. We'll be back next Saturday. Till then, so long.